and Dr. Drew.
Loveline, coast to coast.
Hey, everybody, it's Loveline. I'm Adam Carolla. That's Dr. Drew over there. Phone number 1-800-LOVE-191. Dr. Drew, board-certified physician, addiction medicine specialist. And tonight, we are going to bring on a couple of guests after this first segment who are going to tell us everything everyone ever wanted to know about the law and molestation and rape and all. We get a lot of these questions about what you can do.
Every night.
You were date raped. You want to report it, but you don't want a court trial.
Or it happened a week ago, and is it too late? And
or it happened when you were a kid, and it's been 10 years.
Or what's going to happen when I go to the ER for the evaluation?
Right. How to collect evidence if you've ever been a victim of a sexual crime, mm-hmm. or...
is it just wrong to do an 85-year-old?
Or if you've ever done an 85-year-old?
And her hips break? Are you liable?
How you can collect evidence in that situation. We will bring, now one of them is, Deputy District Attorney of, Los Angeles, and, we have to talk to her about, many, many issues involving, traffic side of
oh my gosh,
this fine, fine, fine city of ours.
Maybe you gotta get that off your chest first. You gotta save it for the very end.
Well, I'll have to talk off the air about priorities involving traffic, but that's Eva Jabber. But I don't think she, I don't know if that's her field of expertise,
no,
but
I'll,
she may know some friends. And then Christopher Koniak is a, both have interesting last names, but they're real. And he's a police officer, and he's asked us not to say where he's a police officer, but it's a big, big outfit, big municipality, and he knows his stuff. And Drew,
mm-hmm.
you want to jump in at all here?
I'm just thinking he was going to talk to us about the process whereby people would go in for an evaluation under what circumstance, what the nuts and bolts would be of making these kinds of reports, what actually happens.
Right, and most of these questions we don't have answers to, so we're gonna figure that out tonight, and we'll take some phone calls. But if you have questions about these subjects,
yeah,
for instance, you were date raped,
rape, physical abuse, sexual abuse, and any kind of victimization, we'll get into tonight.
Right, and you want to know what your legal recourse is? This is a good time, good night to call, Jeff.
Jeff?
I'm here.
You're 25?
Yeah, that's me.
All right.
Hey, Adam, did you ever help Drew's kids out with their treehouse?
Yeah, I built them a three-level treehouse.
Thank you for asking. My bud was
subterranean parking.
He was bugging me about that tonight. Please, I keep going home. I tell her, well, he hasn't said yes, and he hasn't said no, Paulina. Oh, please, please, please get him to answer tonight, first thing. So,
please,
Adam, what's
please,
gonna,
please.
What's it going to be?
Am I going to come to your house and build a tree house?
So she has it.
No.
Maybe you can. Okay, no, that's the first time you've said that.
Yeah, no, I'm not. I'm literally a millionaire. What would be in it for me to go to your house and build a tree house?
Maybe
do an answer segment out of it.
No. Karma. What? I should help rich white kids. That's my lot in life.
Oh, and they're all covered with poison oak now. I've been monkeying around over there where they went to the treehouse.
There you go. That's karma.
Right.
That's karma. Jeff?
Yeah, my question is, my girlfriend broke up with me about a month ago, and I can't stop thinking about her having sex with other guys.
Yeah, I know.
How old is she?
How old is she?
Yeah.
23.
Was this your first girlfriend?
No, I've had probably three serious girlfriends.
Man, these are the thoughts you have at 25.
Isn't that a little bit late to be doing that still?
Yeah. And Jeff, I feel bad because I nailed her too. But what can you say other than there's certain things in life that are inherently painful, especially for guys.
Yes.
And this is one of them.
And they torture themselves with this.
And
I can't stop thinking about it.
We do, and every guy has done this. And kill yourself before then, or it'll go away if you kill yourself.
Are you having any contact with her?
Yeah, we still talk.
That mistake.
We still see each other.
No. Stop that. Stop
okay.
that. That's where the torture's coming from.
Okay.
Start seeing other people. Maybe in 6 months you can get back have a friendship with her, but not right now.
Okay.
Right, you're trying to rekindle things?
Yes, of course.
Yeah,
of course.
Yeah.
In the meantime, you torture yourself.
And are you asking her for information in the meantime?
No, I'm trying to be good about that instead.
Yeah, imagine.
How do you know what she's doing?
I don't.
Instead, there's just a balloon over his head of this picture, these crazy fantasies.
She's probably not doing anything.
Yeah, that's the point.
Well, why do you think she's doing something if she's probably not doing anything?
I don't know. I'm kind of jealous to begin with. I was jealous during a relationship because I always thought she's a lot hotter than I was.
Yeah.
So now I think she's going out with all these hot guys and having sex with them, and so.
Okay. Jeff?
Yeah.
You got to get over it. You got to move forward. I'm not saying you don't have to be uncomfortable or in some degree of pain, but you can't keep going back to it.
He needs to bring up his number, don't you think?
Yes. Yes, guys. You need to, what do you do for a living?
I'm a student.
Really? You're 25?
I know, yeah. That was one of our issues, actually.
Okay. You just plug away, make some money, get a career, get a life, get that, laser surgery and lose those glasses, and,
It's expensive.
You got glasses, all right?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. You gotta lose them. Chicks don't like those glasses. Chicks like guys who wear glasses who don't need to wear glasses. But they don't like guys who wear glasses who have to wear glasses.
Can't have been wearing them since you were 8.
Calling all nerds. I could tell by the guy's voice that he wore glasses. Now, what percentage of 25-year-old males wear glasses?
20.
20?
15.
All right. Okay.
Well, these days, huh?
Yeah. Lauren?
Yeah.
You're 27?
Yeah. Hi, guys.
Hey.
Here's my question. My mom has a pretty long history of drug abuse, mostly speed. Actually, mostly heroin, but some speed, too.
Mm-hmm.
I think she's using again, and I don't live in the same city. I live in San Francisco. She lives in San Diego. And I have 3 little brothers and sisters at home.
With her?
I think she's using again. How can I tell, and what should I do?
The probability is if you think she's using again, she's using. Right? Is she going to meetings? Is she actively involved in her recovery?
She was doing this methadone program.
No.
That's the only thing.
That's a waste of time. I mean, that's just switching from one drug to another.
Yeah.
And now she's off the methadone?
I don't know.
Either that or maybe she's getting so much methadone she seems loaded, which is another way people...
Well, she's different than when she was on heroin and methadone. She's, like, speedier. Like,
yeah.
When she was on heroin, she just, like, locked herself in her room and slept all the time.
So you think she's back on stimulants again?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, if she's not engaged in treatment, she's going to relapse. It's really very simple.
So what should I do?
Has she ever been in recovery before?
No.
How old are these... brothers and sisters of yours?
One sister's 9, one brother, he's 11, he has autism actually, and 15-year-old sister.
Yeah, maybe we ought to hold her until we get the legal guys in here to talk about whether or not there can be leverage applied to require her to get some treatment or actively engage in treatment, lest her kids can be taken away from her.
Well, I'd also like to talk of the, I'd like to speak to our law enforcement people about the legality of putting hits on delinquent people.
We'll talk about it.
Sort of that this squad, the black shirt squad,
mm-hmm.
guys who wear their hats backward and just take out people.
I thought they were going to wear, like, Panama hats. And
I originally had them in Hawaiian shirts, wraparound sunglasses, and those pork pie hats, you know. But too noticeable.
I
look like goons from the 60s. I'm now putting them in black shirts and turning their hats backward.
So Lauren, she's probably doing something. She needs to be in treatment. If she's never been in treatment, it's ridiculous to be monkeying around their kids' lives in the sway of the balance here.
I know.
Where are their dads?
She has 6 kids with 4 different guys.
No, see, we should have got the hit squad out earlier. Right after you were
They're
born.
They're all over the place.
No, can you get, I mean...
They've all got their own problems, too.
The dads. Yeah. They're all addicts, too. Right?
Yeah.
6 kids, huh? Are you the oldest?
I'm the second oldest.
Hmm. No, you sound pretty sane.
I'm okay.
Well, just to work at it.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I think I turned out pretty normal, but...
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
what should I do?
Yeah, what
How do you turn out normal with that kind of background? What did you do? What's the magic?
I don't know. I went to college and got a job, and I think it was like I saw what was happening to her,
mm-hmm.
and I knew I didn't want that. It was like it wasn't an option for me to mm-hmm. do that, you know, basically. So I just didn't
inherit the gene.
I guess.
Right. All right. Well, now what does she do, or who does she call?
Yeah.
Maybe we should put you on hold.
Yeah, hold on for a second. We'll talk about what solutions you can get into. All right.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Well,
she's out with Child Protective Services. Is where to go.
You think so?
Yep.
The autistic kid, you think he knows?
Mm-hmm.
Is it better to be somewhat retarded when you got a retarded parent?
Well, now you're going to get a billion calls of people saying autism is not retardation. And some of those autistic kids are actually quite bright.
Well, let me explain my thing with retardism. It's an umbrella that covers most of society.
Hmm.
I put a lot of people fall
all,
under,
well,
all under
callers,
that umbrella.
All of our callers.
Everyone who calls the show, most people listen. Liz?
Yes.
You're 19?
Yes.
What's up?
I keep getting my menstrual cycle like twice a month, and it's like officially like I'll get my menstrual cycle after I have sex.
How long you had this for?
I started having sex when I was 16.
How long have you been having the irregular periods?
About for the past 4 or 5 months.
Are you overweight?
I'm average weight.
You're average weight.
Yeah, I'm like, if people say I'm not overweight, to me, I think I am.
How much are you overweight, you think?
I might say maybe about 20, 30 pounds. But
okay, sometimes for some people that's enough to affect the period.
Not like where the weight should be. It's like more in the bust area.
Ooh.
Yeah, so it's like...
Nothing wrong with that.
So it's like the waist is like a 34, the bust is like a 42E. And
bouncy, bouncy.
Yeah.
34.
So it's like very like 42E, 34. It's like, I don't think I'm like super fat. And people, like, I get complimented all the time. I'm not sure it's just, like,
How much do you actually weigh?
What kind of compliments? Like, hey, you're not super fat?
Like, my friend Jeff and I were, like, intimate together, and he tells me, no, you're not fat. You have nothing to worry about.
He's what together?
Intimate.
Intimate.
Yeah, intimate together.
And he tells you you're not. Yeah, but if you have someone tell you you're not fat more than 3 times a year, you may be fat. No one ever tells non-fat people they're not fat.
How much do you actually weigh?
If I know of, like, when I was in jail, it was about, they weighed me as 160.
160?
5'6".
Did she just slip something in there about being in jail?
When she was in jail.
I thought so.
And when they weigh you in jail, do you get on a scale or do you get on one of those, like, fishing scales that they hang you from?
Scale.
They get it on a scale?
Yes.
All right. Now, Liz, you want any medication?
No. I've been in and out of the hospital because I'm having trouble breathing. And I have only thing, like, medically wrong with me that I know of is my thyroglossal duct cyst.
Thyroglossal duct cyst. You have a little cyst in the middle of your neck.
Correct. I've had that since birth.
And that's why you're having trouble breathing?
Yes. At night, when I lay down, I have, like, trouble breathing, so I can sit upright.
And they put you in the hospital for that?
They put me in the hospital. I actually stopped breathing when I was in jail. And that's when I found out I had it.
Because you had a
something very wrong
lesbian trying to smother you with a pillow or because of the problem?
No, if that was the case, my girlfriend would be doing that. But
my girlfriend, here we go.
Wait, what?
It gets weird. She throws this stuff out.
Yeah.
Right? Just tosses it away.
What were you in jail for?
I actually had a fugitive warrant I didn't know about.
Oh, all right. Well, some people are born into fugitive warrants.
Yeah,
I remember my cousin was born with one. And he wasn't aware of it. And one day, there he was.
Well, they handed out for generations.
Yeah, he was walking on the campus of Harvard, and he was brought down by patrolmen.
I thought maybe it was stress because I've been in and out of trouble. I actually just got done through, like, a court date I actually had for a bench trial. Got that taken care of. But that's been, like, taken care of. And that was before my irregular, like, menstrual cycle.
How'd you get the fugitive warrant?
I was being charged for a burglary and, like, being told I was sold somebody's shampoo, makeup, and condoms.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So. Okay, well.
Good time.
How is it, how's it everyone we talked to was in prison was there? I stole half a Pepsi from a guy. From a junkie who'd passed out after he'd molested somebody.
And told me to enjoy myself.
6 years they gave me. No priors? No. Totally clean.
You are found guilty as charged.
Didn't even sip the Pepsi and it was warm and flat. Wow. Really? Six years. No priors. On the honor roll. Jeez. Is the system that effed up? People have fugitive warrants they're not aware of. They still steal a little lip gloss and they're doing hard time. It always makes me think that maybe they're leaving a little something out of the story.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. People do not have something called insight.
Okay.
Yeah. But listen, Liz, the weight can definitely do it. Changes in your appetite, your activity levels, even your sleep, your stress levels. Medication, obviously, we talked about. All this can cause irregular periods.
Okay.
And having it after sex is not an uncommon thing at all.
Okay, but it's been happening, like, a lot lately.
I know. Well, so you got to get checked out, make sure there's not ovarian cyst or endometriosis or polyp or something.
I also have another question.
No.
I'm sorry.
All right.
But this might seem a little weird, but for the past, like, when I've been, like, in and out of relationships since I actually broke up with my ex-fiance, I've been actually, I don't know, maybe it's just me. The only way I can actually get turned on before sex is me going down on my partner. is there a reason why that could be?
Your partner,
male
who is
female?
Male?
A male.
Oh. All right. That's just you.
Okay.
That's fine.
Is that the wrong with you?
No. No. Okay. No. You got bigger fish to fry than that. Okay. Hey, and no more kids, right?
I have none.
Yeah, baby.
But though, I've been, like, trying.
Why?
Why? I was actually trying for, like, about four, almost actually a year and a half in the past, like, 4 months when I, like, before I broke up with my fiancé, it was, like, nothing.
Make a pledge right now. You're not going to have any kids till you're 28. Pledge to Adam. Hand over your heart.
You know what side that's on?
Yes.
Pledge to Adam. No kids.
But I want a family and everything. Like,
that's fine. You can have one after 28, okay?
Listen, you look at the penal system as your family, okay? Don't worry about those kids. All right, screwball, and you know, you stay out of trouble. You're costing me too much goddamn money. Do you hear me? All you idiots. You all owe me money. That's the way I look at it. Jesus Christ. I've really figured out that about 3% of this society is raping the rest of society monetarily. We're all paying for you, just a couple of you screwballs out there.
No, but see, you're in that 3%, Adam, of people that have millions of dollars. You're in that 1%, so you are obliged to pay for that other 3%.
Yeah.
My boyfriend, literally a millionaire. Yes, you're literally a millionaire, you're my boyfriend, and you owe it to that percentage that is not as privileged as you.
That's right.
Growing up with that silver spoon.
Where do I get off? Yeah, not having kids and socking away money. What gives me the right? Andrew?
Yes.
You're 15?
Yes, I am.
What's up?
Well, like, you remember high school, right, Adam?
Yes.
Like, the second semester, sometimes your classes get changed around, right? Like, I get changed, and boom, there's this Asian chick. Like, I don't know, I have a thing for Asian chicks. It's something about them. Like, the way they act, the way they look, everything. And, like, I've had a thing for her ever since. But then I find out my friend has this thing for this Asian chick, too, the same exact one. So I'd be quiet about it, and then we start becoming real good friends. And, like, my feelings just keep getting stronger and stronger. And I'm yeah. And, like,
I don't think you owe your friend anything unless he's actually going out with her, is he?
Well, he wanted to.
Oh, yeah, but he's not. And you're there first, and you both like her, and she likes you, sounds like.
Well, this was a long time ago, and now, things have gone through, and she went out with another one of my friends. And, like, they had a little bit of a relationship, and I don't know what's going on.
All right, what's going on is she has another boyfriend.
No, she doesn't. I'm sure she doesn't. But
well, I thought you said one of your friends is the one she has a relationship with now.
That was before, now they're broken up again.
Fantasy answer.
So why don't you ask her out just to hang out with her?
What are you? What's your nationality?
I'm white.
Oh, yeah, that's fine. The Asians don't like other cultures that much at all, the parents. They're the most racist out of any group.
Well, no, it depends which.
Yeah, well, I'm racist, so I look at them as all one race. I don't see the difference between Japanese, Chinese, or Filipino. It's all just one big Asian to me.
I believe she likes me to some extent. It's just she always does something that contradicts it.
Like what?
Yeah.
Well, like, today we were talking on the phone, and, like, well, if she hears me saying that, she's going to know it's me on the radio, but, like, we were talking on the phone, and then she was like, yeah, so how long have you liked me? And I told her, and then I was like, nah, I used to like her friend. And then she was like, so why'd you say you liked her? And I was like, well, I was afraid to tell you because I didn't know you wanted to be my friend. It was kind of like a secret. And then she's like, oh, yeah, I'm, like, having that right now.
Hey, Andrew?
Yeah, what's up?
This ain't Tiger Beat Hotline, you understand?
We got
fish to fry, you understand? There are people out there have been raped
and
molested.
Coming in and an officer.
Yes. I'm going to have him run a check on me. I could have some warrants out there and be going downtown.
So how do I know if she feels sorry?
Oh, who cares? You just ask her out. Would you, wuss her?
Yeah, if you're that sort of insecure, she's not going to go for it.
No.
Let me tell you one thing chicks can't stand. They can't stand the spaz factor. They do not like spazzy guys.
Yeah, spaz and desperation go hand in hand.
Oh.
They hate that crap.
I'll tell you, I watch this Real World on MTV.
Yeah.
I love these shows.
Really?
And there's this hot blonde chick who's like 21, 22, and she's living in the Real World house.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this sort of blonde frat guy who lives in the house with her. And she's got a crush on this guy. And mostly because he has a girlfriend back home and won't budge.
Right.
And in the meantime, she meets some good-looking, tall, dark, handsome guy who's into her and wants to take her out. So he takes her out on a date or two, But she has no interest in this guy.
Because he's into her.
Because he's into her.
Yeah.
Yes. So women are very, especially young women, are very diabolical that way. So then you have a catch-22. How do you express to someone you're into them without letting them think you're too into them? It's a very fine line. The guys who score, the guys who get laid, are the guys who are able to express limited interest in a girl.
Direct. Somehow, sort of a direct kind of a presence.
Yes, how can I put you on notice that I'm interested in you without you thinking I'm too interested in you?
Mm-hmm.
And it always ends up, you know, the guys who get laid all the time? Mm. Here's how it ends up coming across. Yeah, I'll take you. But it's like when your dad gives you his car. It's not exactly what I wanted, but I'll drive it to school. Do you know what I mean?
Yep.
Better than walking.
Yeah.
There has to be that element. And when you're spazzing, you're desperate, and it ain't gonna work. So I don't know what that advice is, guys. You have to kind of find that balance, but please do it. And remember, the more you like them and the more you show you like them, oftentimes the less they like you. Very sad. Okay, we're going to take ourselves a break, and when we come back... Please, please, please...
No.
We're going to bring in a deputy district attorney from Los Angeles and a law enforcement officer to tell us all about a lot of the laws that are on the books and a lot of ways to handle a lot of the questions that we get involving sometimes rape and date rape and molestation and all things like that, and as things involving the internet. All the stuff as it pertains to the legal world that we don't have answers to, we were going to attempt to answer tonight right after this. Hey, everybody. It's Loveline. I'm Adam Carolla. That is Dr. Drew. I was just regaling the officers about the time I drove off a tow truck in a $45,000 sports car that was in full tilt, by the way. And if the guy who tried to tow me is listening, kiss my hairy ass, you prick. You got nothing. Nothing, you jackass. Thank you. Eva Jabber is our guest, and so is Christopher Cognac. Eva is a deputy district attorney of Los Angeles, and Christopher is a police officer with many years' experience in quite a resume here, by the way, which is literally in front of me. Domestic terrorism.
I want to know what the Delinquency Control Institute is.
That's a program at the University of Southern California.
How do you control delinquency?
Well, it's not specifically for delinquency control. It's been around since the early...
Why would I think that with anything called Delinquency Control Institute? How dare me?
It's a program at USC that deals with juvenile justice. A lot of people go there. It's pretty intensive, upper level, like a master's level program. You have to write papers, take tests, do oral interviews. It's just a good way to experience the juvenile justice system, to rethink and get new ideas about prosecution and different ways to handle crime for juvenile behavior.
Any sort of take-home pet theories of yours? What's wrong with our system? Why do we have so many messed up kids?
What's wrong with the system? That's a that's a big question there, Drew.
Well, I thought maybe you walked away with some sort of thematic, you know, idea of your own that you wanted to...
It's all rehabilitation versus incarceration. It's the age-old argument.
Yeah.
You got to give a little bit of both. I mean, you can tell them not to do it one time, and then the next time they need to go and do some time.
Right, and Eva over here. Eva, now, what does your day consist of?
Well, I'm a child sexual assault prosecutor, so I work with detectives like Detective Cognac, and they bring us a case. We look at an initial report, and if we think that we need to do an interview with the victim, we have them come in. And once we have interviewed the victim, if we feel there's enough to file a case, we file it and take it up through the system.
And we were talking off the air that there were some interesting things to do if you had been victimized or thought you were raped or had a case, and there's some do's and don'ts. For instance, we're talking about confronting the person that may or may not have done this to you and so forth. Could you guys shed a little light on that?
Sure.
That'd be more along my lines. A lot of times, we only get one shot to catch somebody. Sometimes there's no physical evidence. The crime will occur.
Well, there's a call. Let's say, let him do it in the context of a call, because a call about this kind of thing.
All right.
So you take this.
All right.
This is Mike. He is 16. Mike.
Yeah. My friend was raped a couple of months ago, and actually a week or two ago, and her boyfriend just disappeared.
Is he the one that did it?
Yeah, he did, and it was sort of like a date rape, but he locked her in a closet and just sexually assaulted her. Mm-hmm. He beat her until she actually just gave in.
And they were not, hadn't previously been sexually active? Two of them?
Yeah, her dad raped her, I think, when she was like 8 or 9.
There you go.
Well, let me ask the just call you the officers for just it's faster. But if somebody, how much bearing does it have? I know you're talking about a dad, but how much if you'd never had sex with the person and they raped you, as opposed to a date rape or a relationship rape situation, you'd had sex, been with the person for a number of years, and then had sex. Is it harder to prosecute a case like that?
You know, it is. It can be more difficult to prosecute a date rape situation because there are so many biases in mm-hmm. society about if you've had sex with somebody before, you can't be raped. If you're married to somebody, the spouse cannot rape you, and it's not true.
Well, this is Adam. This is your question about rape versus violent rape.
Right. What I mean is it's a taller order for you guys to win a case like that someone who's had prior relations with somebody, for instance.
Well, there are two different issues. If somebody's never had sex before and they're raped, let's say by a stranger, or if it's a date rape situation, you may have more evidence because you do a sexual assault exam and there may be medical evidence, and if she says she's never had intercourse before,
right.
You have evidence which will help you out.
Right.
It can be harder to prosecute rapes where, let's say, a boyfriend raped a girlfriend, but we still encourage those people to come forward and call the police, because that's rape just like stranger rape. It's the same thing.
Now, we're often telling people to go ahead and file a report so they sort of compile a record for these perpetrators. Is that something that really happens? Or is it such a hassle for these young women to go through this? I mean, in other words, is that a painful process, just to not intend to prosecute it, but at least just to create a record? Is that an important thing?
Well, if somebody comes in and makes a rape report, it's going to be investigated.
Mm.
And unfortunately, the investigations tend to be rather lengthy, and we have to get statements from everybody involved. We're obligated to.
They can't make a report. Just go, I don't want to do anything. Just want to file a report.
I mean, you can file a report, but I'll have to do an interview with that person, and then I'll have to bring it to somebody like Eva and run it by the district attorney's office.
Hmm. Hey, Drew.
Hmm.
Remember about 2 weeks ago we had a law officer call up and say that you
exactly
could just file a report,
yeah.
And I kept saying over and over again, how can you just file a report without something being followed
it was,
up?
He was from Idaho, right?
And
he,
I said it 5 times,
yeah.
And you kept saying, apparently you can't.
The guy was saying it.
And then I said, well, what if I said somebody tried to murder me?
Yeah.
Wouldn't you be obliged and obligated to go after this person, even if I said I just want to get it on record? And what would stop people from getting things on record
that never
happened? And then you two idiots both said, no.
Well, no, this guy went on to talk about how that happens all the time.
Oh, we should never listen to anyone who calls this show. I realized, and I have no, I know nothing about law enforcement other than trying to outrun the law, but still, that's some knowledge. Outrun the law, but I still knew that sounded wrong. That if you come in and you make a case or you file a report, it must be followed up on, right?
It has to be followed up on. And if you in the jurisdiction that I cover, if Detective Cognac gets a case, for example, they're required to forward it to us. And we take a look at it, and that's where things have changed within the prosecution of these cases in the last few years, in that we have really tried to make it less of a torturous experience for victims to come forward and report to us.
Now, Mike's friend is refusing to go for help to report this.
Right.
Right,
so,
Mike? Mike?
Yeah.
She's refusing to report this?
Yeah, well, I've even gone to her school and try to tell the counselor, and she just denies it. And her parents, don't, they know about it, but they won't give her any support.
So what can you do? So many of the people that are victimized are great victims. They're like professional victims, and they don't have trouble breaking out of that.
Yeah, unfortunately, a lot of sexual assault victims feel deprived of some dignity and embarrassed, and they feel kind of dirty. And so, therefore, they're reluctant to report the matter.
Well, our callers, they feel like they deserve it. They go through this repeatedly. There's a
sometimes
whole cycle they get involved with.
Or
this.
They ask for it, or if,
yeah,
if they've had sex with the person before, then it couldn't have been rape.
So how do you convince someone to? I mean, they're psychologically very rigidly fixed with these.
Well,
notions.
They don't talk to people who aren't coming to them, do you?
You
wouldn't know if a person.
Well, I would think they're both doing
report.
A lot. They're both studying this process. I would think they'd be thinking about that stuff.
Well, and you'll have people who will report it on behalf of somebody, and then the detective will go out and talk to the person.
So this young man could go report it on her behalf.
I don't know how it works.
He's in Arizona.
State.
He's in Arizona.
Is that a minor? Is the victim a minor?
Yeah, both. He's a minor and she's a minor.
Yeah, they can report it to a Department of Social Services, and then the Social Services give all assaults. Child abuse cases, they forward them as through mandated reporting, which means we checks and balances, go to the police department, and then a detective will be assigned it. We'll most likely contact that person. Whether or not that person chooses to disclose that a crime occurred or not is up to them. And if they do disclose that a crime occurred, then a police investigation will be conducted and forwarded to the district attorney.
I would imagine that a fairly high percentage of people who did not want to come forward themselves, once they were contacted by somebody, and I don't mean 90%, but maybe 50% or 55%.
Become forthcoming.
Yeah, once they were contacted by somebody with a sort of official capacity, might then go ahead and say something.
That's true.
So it's worth a shot. I mean, if your friend, your sister, your whoever is being abused or raped or what have you and is too scared or too paralyzed to go deal with it themselves, it is within your right to go talk to law enforcement about it.
Absolutely.
And do something about it.
I think both, I can speak on behalf of both of us who deal with this every day, and I deal specifically with children, minors under 18, and I have to say that almost every victim that I've spoken to at the end of the interview has said, gosh, this just went so much better than I expected it to. And often their parents don't offer them appropriate support. They're blamed by their peers. They're called a slut. It's the environment that they're in is so not conducive to them doing the right thing, which is to come forward, report it. You will be taken care of. You will be believed. It's very important to come forward.
Okay. And so for young Mike over here, hey, Mike?
Yeah.
So you told her counselor at school, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and she said that she talked to her, and the counselor called me at my house and said that she denies of any rape. And, well, here's another thing. With the guy that she was going out with 17.
Yeah.
And now he's 18, but during the time he was 17, I think there's, like, a law in Arizona, like, if you're over 18 or something, you can be, like, put in like a, it'll be like a major felony or something like that. I heard that somewhere. I was just like, so.
Well, I think Officer Cognac was saying though that you should be still calling Department of Social Services.
Yeah, her grandma's done that also. I know her grandma because she lives like right next door to me. And I've even talked to Kim, that's her name, and she just won't go for any help.
We got that part of the
Hey,
story.
Mike?
Yeah.
You gotta live your own life at a certain point. I mean, as much as I want to see justice done, you go on to the grandma and the counselor, and you've alerted all the appropriate adults. I think now it's time, this one's out of your hands now.
I think Mike's a little interested in this.
Mike,
person.
You interested in candy?
Yes.
No, I got a girlfriend.
You do?
I love her dearly. Yeah, she's 16, so yeah.
Your girlfriend?
Yeah, she's...
How's your girlfriend like you prosecuting rape trials on the side?
Well, she knows it, but me and her have known Candy for at least 2 or 3 years, and she, we're both really concerned about it.
Okay.
Well, you be there for her.
And one more thing, Adam. Mm-hmm. You are God.
Well, that's true.
That does not compute. Somebody thinks you're a God is... running after rape victims? I can't quite get that.
I would like that on my license to get me out of any moving violations.
You are God?
Just God.
Okay.
I am God. I wouldn't be you. Just something that I can... What's the best way to get out of a ticket? I mean, let's really... We can talk about rape till the cows come home, but... Practically, I've grown out of that. I want to know about how to beat a ticket. That's what I'm
There's
asking.
Several ways. Most of us appreciate just
ask
general
ask
no general
it.
Honesty because we're not going to write you a ticket for something stupid for the most part. I'm going to ask you why. You know why I pulled you over?
Yeah.
You say, yeah, I'm sorry about that.
You want that?
A lot of the time, you know, I'm not guaranteeing it, but hey, you know, all right, don't do it again. But
admission of guilt is good?
Not necessarily an admission of guilt, but, you know, acknowledgement. If you say, hey, I'm sorry I ran the light, officer, I understand. We appreciate the truth because we get lied to on a regular basis by everything. I mean, we've heard everything in the book.
It's insulting, too, when you know the guy's lying.
Yeah, and it's, you know, if I got you dead bang, I got you dead bang, okay? But if you say, oh, why'd you pull me over, officer? Well, it'll be on this ticket I'm going to give you right here, pal. It's right here.
So, all right. So, be up front and hands on the wheel.
I gotta emphasize that. Let us see your hands on a traffic stop because bottom line is we don't know who you are.
Right.
You might have seen us around, but, I mean, we get some really weird stuff going on. And here in L.A., you've seen it all on TV, all these wild pursuits, all these chases. We don't know if you just killed somebody or if you're fleeing or anything like that. Just keep your hands on the wheel. And, you know, if you're going to make a movement, say, hey, officer, you know what? I'm going to go grab my wallet. And he'll say, okay, go ahead and do that. Or no, just hold on a second.
All right. So just comply to the point of saccharine sweet sort of compliance.
My thing
right?
is always I have no excuses.
Yeah, Drew is good. Drew, you could guilt them into not giving you a ticket. Right?
Because if I'm violating, I probably know I'm doing it, and I just have no excuses.
Kiss ass, and the other thing is now what if you do get the ticket, you want to fight the ticket? Is there a decent technique for that?
Well, your best bet is that he won't show up.
Right, but do officers get time and a half for showing up at these court things? That's what I hear.
Well, we get paid overtime for excess hours worked over 40 hours, but the general rule is traffic court is the lowest,
right.
The lowest level of court. We have superior court. Federal court's the highest, and then we have multiple cases. So if you're writing a bunch of tickets in a day and then you have a criminal case, say a robbery, at a superior court, then you have to miss all the traffic courts because superior court takes precedence over that. So anybody there, you know, they win.
And what if they say if you fight a ticket, you forego your right to go to traffic school, or at least that's the way I heard. No, untrue?
I don't know about that.
They lead you to believe that if you're going to fight it, then you're going to sort of give up your traffic school angle on the whole thing. Can you go in, let's say you get a ticket, you go in, you decide to fight the ticket, you show up at court, the officer shows up at court, you don't win the case, but you say to the judge, all right, I lost, can I still go to traffic school?
Generally, that does not happen. Usually, what I've seen in traffic court is the judges, whatever judge they may be, will say, okay, last chance, who wants to go to traffic school? And usually the guys whose cops showed up will raise their hands.
Right.
And then they'll get to go to traffic school.
So it is true. Once you decide to fight, once you try to decide to dispute the ticket, if you lose, you lose. You're not going to be able to sort of back out and go to traffic school at that point.
Oh, you have to suffer whatever consequences of the ticket, yeah.
Right. And if you lose, do you just pay what you would have paid for the ticket anyway, or do you get more?
I don't know. I haven't written a ticket in a long time.
Good man. Good man. Good answer.
You like Chris.
Yeah. All right, yeah. We'll take ourselves a little break. We'll come back. We'll discuss a little more of the law on you and how it pertains to your sexuality and all that good stuff after this. Hey, everybody. It's Loveline. I'm Adam Carolla. There's Dr. Drew. Phone number 1-800-LOVE-191. Eva Jabbers, our guest tonight. She's a deputy district attorney of Los Angeles.
And Christopher Cognac, he's Captain Tennille's nephew.
Boy, am I drunk. That's right. You're a detective, right?
Yes.
And we oftentimes get calls about rape and abuse and all sorts of things that are immoral and illegal. And we're not sure what steps to take in order to prosecute the people that need to be prosecuted in these situations. And tonight we brought some experts on to discuss it. So do you want to take a call or do you want to get in more discussions?
No, let's take a call.
Okay.
Yeah. We'll
cover everything, though. Don't you worry. Carrie?
Hi.
You're 22?
I am.
What's up?
I just actually called. I listen all the time, and I get really mad at you for things that you say. And
Drew?
Go ahead, Gary.
Okay, sorry. And but I always give up by the time that I actually get through. It's about you guys talking. You're talking the officer when he first came on. He said that rehabilitating juvenile delinquents is about punishing them when they do something wrong the second time. I was kind of wondering how you have a deputy district attorney who specializes in representing sexual abuse victims on the air when an awful lot of the juvenile girls who are detained in the U.S. are victims of sexual abuse and have been detained because of status offenses.
Because of what?
Status offenses.
What does that mean? Carrie?
It means being being promiscuous, being truant. A status offense is a crime that if a child commits it, like skipping school, is a crime.
I see.
But an adult, it's
right,
not illegal.
Right, right, right.
All right. So, you think there's a large prison population made up of truant teenage girls?
In juvenile detention centers.
Yeah.
Okay. An awful lot of the girls who are surveyed reported being victims of sexual abuse, and they're being detained for having run away from home.
Okay. Well, there's an interesting question. What about that question?
Well, they have to report a crime in order for us to investigate it. That's the deal. As far as you're talking about status offenders, when somebody runs away and they're, you know, caught, they're generally returned home. If the home is unfit, they'll be taken to what's called a soda bed, which is a status offender
detention alternative. So what Kara's reporting is not accurate.
No, it is in the sense that they've most of these people, as we know from doing this
abused,
show,
for sure.
Everybody who runs away from their house has some form of abuse.
Yes, of course.
But on the other hand, I don't know what the system is supposed to do if the people don't come forward and report the abuse. Now, I agree with Carrie, I think, in her assertion that they should understand that most of these people are probably abused in some way, and perhaps try to set up a situation where they're able to coax that out of them or work
but
that
there
with
are,
them.
I think what Chris, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but that there are limits to rehabilitation, and containment is from a therapeutic standpoint is what really a lot of these people need. And containment sometimes is, means putting you in a structured environment. That's what they need.
Should they be contained or put in structure with people who are doing things like vandalism?
That's what Chris was just addressing, whether or not that actually happens.
Yeah.
You're talking about a different thing. I mean, people that do vandalism don't generally go to a confined detention facility unless they've had multiple offenses.
But she's thinking that these runaway girls who are leaving because of abuse get thrown in the same bin.
They do not. In Los Angeles County, and I believe most of the state of California, status offenders and criminal offenders are kept in separate facilities.
All right. Carrie? Well,
okay.
What do you do for a living, Carrie?
In New York. I'm an actor. Isn't
oh,
that right?
Stop it. Yeah. Would you? Just stop it.
But you've had some victimization.
No, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
But if you're researching a role, I'm going to kill myself.
I was a double major in drama and sociology in college, and studied family law and gender issues.
Well, you got the drama part right, sister. All right, listen, all these screwball actors. Start worrying about yourself and your crappy career. Stop worrying about everyone else. Oh, these actors are the worst.
Where'd that come from?
Oh, they're so... these actors, they go... They're not chaining themselves to a tree somewhere out in the sequoias. They're worried about status offenders in Los Angeles. Just relax and focus on you not getting any jobs. Amy?
Yeah.
You're 21.
And
what's
picketing
up?
Commercial reimbursement rights.
Right, right. You worry about craft service at your next crappy gig. Stop worrying about status offenders. Amy?
Yeah.
You're 21.
Yeah, I was calling to ask the people you have on the show. Recently I was going to a therapist about some issues in my childhood, and I mentioned that I had had a sexual encounter with some of my younger siblings. And she said that she had to mandatorily report it, even though it happened when I was 11. And so I'm kind of concerned about the repercussions of what's going to happen now this has been reported.
Okay, hold on 1 second. We got to take a break.
Okay, we got to take a break, Amy. But now you're 21 now, so this happened about 10 years ago, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. We can answer this, can we not?
Yes.
Yes, this will be interesting.
Okay. We'll get to your answer. I'm interested in hearing the answer, even though I won't be listening when it's actually given out over the air.
You're going to finally be high. Is Willie out back with his band waiting for you?
Willie, I think Willie threw a roach the size of a Volkswagen out of his window. Willie Nelson was on the show last week. I'm going to go out in the parking lot, light it on fire, dance around it like a like a barn burning.
Unbelievable story.
All right. We'll be back after this. Hey everybody, it's Loveline. I'm Adam Carolla. That is Dr. Drew. Phone number 1-800-LOVE-191. Tonight, we're doing away with the country music stars and giving a little something back to the community. Eva Jabbers, our guest tonight, one of our guests tonight. She's a deputy district. I can't say deputy district attorney for the life of me. In Los Angeles, and Christopher Koniak, who's a detective. Both these people specialize in, tell us what you specialize in.
I do child sexual assault prosecution. So if you are under 18 and you've been the victim of rape, any kind of molestation, any kind of sexual touching, if somebody exposed himself to you as you were walking down the street and you saw it happen, anything of a sexual nature, then you would be interviewed by me if you're within my jurisdiction.
And Christopher?
I basically investigate those types of things, as well as child abuse and crimes against children. As well as some things on the internet, internet crimes against children, sex, child pornography, child prostitution.
Well, I'm guessing like that. That's on the rise these days, huh?
Child pornography or prostitution?
The internet variety.
Yeah, basically, pedophiles and people who like to have sex with children have moved from having to comb the parks to being able to comb the internet.
Right.
Since most of our young teens seem to be very internet and computer savvy, these people will go and impersonate themselves and try and make arrangements with young people.
I like it when the cops impersonate the young, naive teens that are on the internet hooking up with these guys. Have you ever been involved with that? That seems like a good time.
Yes. Yes, that's quite fun, especially when you bust them.
Yeah, yeah. And is there a group of guys or so, you know, experts at this who say, look, give them this answer, give them that answer?
Oh well, we have to follow certain procedures where we can't entrap people. We have to have people have to approach us.
Right.
There's a couple guys that do it. Russ Temple and Nick Pepper from.
No, their work, sure.
Yeah, they're good detectives as well as
almost pumped me a couple
the guy
times
named Tom Askridge. They're local people that are that I work with that are kind of internet gurus. We all work together. We have a little task force that we informally formed.
And is the general consensus for pedophiles that these people is sort of an affliction that's a long term thing? I mean, there's 5 years in the joint is not going to cure this. And what about when you are in prison for pedophilia? What do they try to do? I mean, I know it's not what everyone's in for in prison. That's the part that's always curious. You know, they always go, well, man, if you kill a cop, you're this status. But if you molested your granddaughter, what do? They have access to the records? How does everyone know what everyone's in for? If I ever go in the joint, I'm saying I'm in for blowing up a prison. I blew up the last prison I was in. That's why I'm in this one. Don't ask me how I got into that one. That was conspiracy to blow up a prison. But I mean, I'm going to give myself a good title so I'm not effed with, you know? How does everyone find out what everyone's in for?
You know, they say that when you go to prison, it's like a whole different world. You're in a different city. The different rules apply. It's not like anything out in the real world. And, you know, when you go in, the guards have their own sort of code that they conform to. The prisoners have their own code. There's a hierarchy within, and I think people just find out because everybody knows everybody else's business.
Jesus.
That's what we hear.
Also, from court appearances, they'll take the bus to court, and there'll be several defendants in the lockup. And if a person's being arraigned or criminally charged with something, there'll be several other inmates in there. And
they'll go back and gossip.
What's the best thing to be in prison for? I mean, just in terms of not being abused by the prisoner. Say, I'm trying to get my story straight in case the wheels come off the wagon here. Is there a good one? I mean, I know the worst is like a pedophile, right?
The child molesters. Supposedly don't have a good time in prison.
Yeah, they're pretty much the lowest of the low.
Right, that blew half the nursery school. Oh, please, Anderson, that was completely out of context. But who's in the penthouse of prisoners? What could one do to really get some status in the joint? Do you know what I'm saying?
Well, there's status and then there's an easy time. You know, what do you want?
Well, I'd like a little cachet and an easy time. You know, I'd like, what if I'm in the joint for killing a pedophile? You know, that would work, right? That sounds like a pretty decent title to have in there. No answer out of either one of you. No help at all. I mean, you know what not to be, but not necessarily what to be. You know what I think of a nice one for me is going to be counterfeiting. That's a nice straight-ahead one that people seem to respect. That, you know the counterfeiter guy? You don't got a problem with that guy, do you?
Yeah.
Okay.
You need to start sounding like Sean Connery, though. You pick up an accent.
Yeah. All right.
All right, so Amy, we're back.
Where were we?
We're talking to Amy about this mandatory reporting of sexual abuse. Amy?
Right. She's 21. She reported it to her therapist, right?
Amy?
Uh-oh.
Oh, God. Amy.
Hello?
There we are. You reported to your therapist some touching or some sexual abuse you had perpetrated upon your siblings a long time ago, right? 10 years ago. And you're wondering now what's going to happen.
Exactly.
All right, what's going to happen?
Because they reported it, the therapist did.
Therapists have to report this stuff.
Well, there are a number of people, a number of professions that are mandated reporters. You have teachers, you have daycare workers, anybody who's involved with children on a daily basis, clergy, therapists.
Clergy? I thought there was some sanctuary in the church in the past. You not anymore?
I think confessionals are a different situation than if you go and talk to clergy one-on-one. I don't know the details of it,
Interesting.
But you have social workers, any health care professionals are all mandated reporters.
So what's going to happen to Amy?
Well, when you have a crime that's been reported, then it starts to be investigated by local law enforcement.
In my experience, what happens is this kind of thing is they send someone out from DPSS or social services, and they file a lengthy report, they look into it, they acknowledge that the person's in treatment, and nothing much ever seems to come of it after that, in my experience.
So even when it's a 10-year-old thing? I mean,
we especially when it's a 10-year-old
thing.
How old were you when this happened?
11. She was 11.
Yeah.
And this is someone in treatment who's not perpetrating anything currently.
True. What are you, her attorney?
No, I'm just saying this is the way. I think this is the way because the DPSS caseloads are massive and they have stuff that's being underway immediately in their face, and this one sort of goes.
Well, there are. If it comes first to local law enforcement attention, then you can what's called cross report to DCFS, which is where they'll go into the home and make sure that any minors in the home are safe. But if it's a criminal offense, then usually it's brought to law enforcement attention, and at that point, between law enforcement and the district attorney's office, there are decisions that are made.
Amy's asking what's going to happen to her.
She was 11 when this occurred, correct?
Right, that's right.
Well, generally, 11 is a little bit young as far as, criminal prosecution. Every circumstance is different, but it depends on what the acts were, and her age would play a factor at the time.
It doesn't also play a factor that she's now engaged in treatment and, remorseful and
not the part where they investigate it, though. They don't know.
In my experience, where they put these cases in terms of priority in their caseload, these get way down the line.
Let's help Amy sleep tonight.
I think Amy will be sort of. It will be investigated, but it will not be prosecuted. I would bet.
I don't deal with juvenile offenders, so
that'd be
Chris
my
would be.
I wouldn't foresee a prosecution unless there's some type of pattern that has gone over a long time.
That's right.
I mean, basically, what we're saying is there's many cases to be investigated. This is not a high priority when something happened 10 years ago that was perpetrated by a juvenile.
By an 11-year-old, correct.
Yeah. Right, right.
Someone who's currently in treatment and not as an adult acting anymore.
So, yes, it must be documented, but it is far back on the burner as far as things to do. probably be done, probably middle of next
week. On the other hand, if you were not actively engaged in treatment and there were some suspicions on the part of therapists, it could very quickly...
Well, if she wasn't in treatment, she wouldn't have gotten busted in the first place. I mean, you got to look at it that way.
Fair, that's nice.
Well, let's face it, who's she telling if she's not in treatment? Robert?
Yeah?
You're 17?
Yeah.
What's up?
I actually have two questions. My first one is that I'm going out with a 28-year-old.
And you're 17?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right.
And my mom's starting to find out about it, and she told me at the beginning, she goes, I have a funny feeling about this, and if you're lying to me about it and she's older than you are, then she's going to go to jail.
Are you having sex with her?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, now, and what are the statutory rape laws in Idaho? I mean, you're 17, she's 28.
The age is 16 and older, and if your parents know about it, then it's okay in Idaho. But, like, if you're 18 and you're a girl, or if you're 17 or younger and you're a girl, then you can't go out with anyone 18 or older.
Well, that's perfectly clear now.
Were you pre-law, Robert?
What?
What? Wait, Marcus Welby over here. Jesus Christ.
Ironside.
Holy Christ. I now am more confused. Is there trouble or not? Is this illegal or not?
Well, if the parents don't agree with it, then it is illegal and...
Well, these things are essentially often initiated by the parents. So.
Well, when are you going to be 18?
In 7 months.
Yeah, but it's too late. I mean, mom's already...
Right. All right, so you think your mom is going to call the cops here?
Yeah.
You do?
Can she? What'll happen?
In Idaho, I can't say, but in California, the age of consent is 18.
Well, they've got a three-year window, though, here in the state. If you're within 3 years of the...
Well, that makes it a felony versus a misdemeanor. But if you are having sex and you're under the age of 18 and the person you're having sex with is over 18, whether it's a man or a woman, it's a criminal offense.
A misdemeanor.
Felony versus misdemeanor depends on the age.
Because there's a three-year... We've been told over and over there's this three-year window. If somebody's within 3 years of the younger person, they're still okay.
That's more... district attorney policy that goes into policy as opposed to what the law is. If you're under 14, there are certain laws which apply. If you're 14 or 15 and it's not, the perpetrator's not more than 10 years older, then certain laws apply. And if you're 17 and you're a girl and the guy is 19,
right,
it'll be a misdemeanor.
Right.
But when you get to 17 and 28,
right,
you're looking at felony conduct.
Right. Yeah, even if the woman is the 28-year-old.
Even if the woman is the 28-year-old.
Would it not be worse, though, if the 28-year-old was a male and the 17-year-old is a woman?
Well, I think that's what we normally see,
right,
as the older guy. But, I mean, 17 is 17, and male or female, you're still vulnerable. And
how about if it's two 15-year-olds?
Well, that equals 30, so that would... No.
Then it's dealt with at the juvenile level, which actually I don't know anything about.
Hey, Robert?
Yeah?
Can you, first off, tell your mom you broke up. Can you do that?
Yeah.
And have you told her you've had sex with her?
No, my brother-in-law did.
Oh, that's nice.
Let's see what you get for bragging.
No, he walked in on us.
See what you get for screwing? Okay, yep. Look, tell your mom you're breaking up with her. And why don't you break up with her? She's obviously a troubled person. I mean, she's dating a 17-year-old. I know you're the 17-year-old and you think she's a genius, but I'm telling you, she's got trouble. What?
I told her I was 19.
Okay. Well, that's another thing. Now, how does that hold up in court? Is that an excuse? Does that work?
It actually is a defense if you...
can prove it.
If you can prove it.
Well, what if the person just corroborates? They just go, I told him I was 19.
Then usually it can be a defense. If the person looks obviously like they're 13, then you can go in with circumstantial evidence and say there's no way anybody could have thought that you were 19.
Well, I'm guessing Robert has one of those bad teenage mustaches. Robert, is that true?
Yeah.
Yeah. I know. I know... I know what a guy physically, or what a perp, as I call him, looks like when he's engaging in certain behaviors. And I'll tell you, if you guys want me to just ride around with you and tell you who to bust, I can do that. I know the troublemaker.
Anytime, Adam.
Picture this guy with the mullet and the bad teenage mustache.
There's a man show bit here. I see it.
Oh, my God. All right, so... What is our ultimate advice to a young Robert?
Break up?
Yes. All right, break up, and at least tell your mom you've broken things off with this...
troubled person.
This old divorcee. Well, we know her situation,
yes,
too.
Yes, recently a bad marriage with an abusive husband.
Right. And now what's wrong... Why don't we just go ahead and standardize the age of consent here? I mean, well, what's up? I mean,
with the gradations?
Yeah, I mean, we have to pull out a goddamn atlas to try to figure out, you know, who does what where and what the laws are in this particular province and state. I mean, why is
the
there...
The American way.
Hawaii is all screwed up. You know, if they just come up, somebody would just say, I mean, Hawaii is different than Oregon, for instance, and there's nothing is based on anything logical. And some are amazing. I mean, some are sort of offensive when you hear about what the ages of consent are. Yeah, and if the person is over 17 and hooving, then it's like another thing. Well, what's going on here? We can't just agree that, you know, 18 is kind of the cutoff point, and just everyone just sit down and agree on something logical and just apply it. I mean, it's that way with most other things. I mean, booze is all 21 now. We figured that one out. It didn't used to be. That's true. But in the last X amount of years, it got up to a standard 21, and voting and all sorts of things like that.
Okay,
Mr.
Adams, let's hear now from Mr. Jefferson and Mr. Hamilton.
Well, isn't this kind of a no-brainer? Isn't this a no-brainer? And Drew, you do this for a living, and you don't know what's going on.
I'm just saying it's the American way. It's the Confederation of States.
Bob?
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
About a month ago, I was arrested for soliciting a prostitute. And I've come to find out recently that because of that, if convicted of that, that I have to register as a sexual offender.
Ooh.
And I just really...
Adam, listen carefully here.
Yeah, I really don't think it's fair that I'm lumped in with child molesters and all kinds of other people because it's my first offense. I feel like I was entrapped. I wasn't read my rights, and to me it was just a big extortion racket for, you know, the sheriffs to tow cars and to really rape the public so they can buy more Chevette.
See what you caused there?
He's in California.
Right. My question is this, I guess, to your guest tonight. What is the best way for me to try to avoid having to register as a sexual offender? Seeing it's my first offense, could I maybe get this lower to a disorderly conduct? What would your advice be? And my second part of the question is, does any of these thousands of dollars go back into AIDS awareness programs or a shelter for prostitutes to get back on their feet, or does it just go back to the police departments?
They buy mustache wax for the cops
and scooters for the parking attendants.
That's right. That's where the money goes in. Modifications on the Chevettes, lowering headers, intake systems, exhaust, customizing interiors, things like that. That's where the money goes into.
Adam, is this to you borderline on the chicken-ass jaywalking tickets and all that kind of
stuff? See what you do, Adam? See what you've done here?
It's scary when I hear how angry my listeners are, though.
Because of you.
Well, listen, I'll tell you. The one time I was sued on this show, or at least attempted to be sued, when Heidi Fleiss came in here, her prosecution and all the cops that were, posing as Asian businessmen in order to do all this. Yes, that part sickens me, that part of law enforcement. Way too much time and resources wrapped up in that. And I disagree, as you do, Bob, that you should be labeled as a sexual offender or listed as a sexual offender.
Let's hear what our guests have to say.
They're
way too polite. They could have answered this 5 minutes ago.
I'm assuming you're arrested for 647B, which is solicitation of prostitution.
Yeah, can I just real quick, can I just tell you that, first of all, she started talking to me, and I said, you know, what's up? And I was just, I mean, they were in, Adam, they were literally right by the man show, and as you know, there's no women over there. They're all men. And I said, whoa, you guys are way too hot to be, you know, prostitutes. You got to be cops.
There are a lot of transvestites.
No. And then she was really working it, like, come on, baby. You know, it was like she wanted $50, and she said, no, I'm not a cop. And it was towards Christmas, and I was like, you know, this is a godsend. And it was a mistake, I admit it. But, yeah, you know, I was caught on film. Guilty as charged, you know, when you get down to it, technically.
By the man show?
Okay, yeah,
over
there.
Hanging out?
No, no.
The Hollywood Center?
Yeah,
like Santa Monica, La Brea, that whole area.
Yeah, it's all transvestites down that stretch.
Yeah, I know. So I thought, you know, I was like, wow, this is like a sign from God. You know, they were hot. I mean, they were like 10.
Yeah.
They were super, super. I mean, any guy. To me, it's like taking a baby seal out into great white infested waters and just ringing the dinner bell.
Oh,
I mean,
see.
That's the way
men
program.
Well, wait a minute, Bob. What were you doing down there in the first place?
I was actually just going to the liquor store.
Looking for a prostitute.
And just walking out and just walking back from the liquor store, and there's just like two beautiful women, and they're like, hey, baby, blah, blah, blah. And we just started talking, and, you know, one thing led to another.
All right. Well, what about the part where you ask them if they're a cop and they say no? I always thought that they had to answer somehow. At least it's portrayed that way in the movies of the week.
No.
They don't have to say anything.
No, we're allowed to use deception, and we do that in interviews.
Oh, what about... Oh, good. I mean, not for me, but good for everyone else who you're using deception on. What about the part where the hookers say to the potential Johns who they think are undercover cops, are you a cop? That's the part where they always seem, I always see in the movies where they have to divulge whether they're a cop or not. They don't have to do that either? No?
No.
No, nope. But you know, there's a popular myth that must be
and
done.
And that's a myth, Adam.
Smart.
Now,
yeah, okay.
Now, can this guy become, get off the sex offender hook there? No.
You know, it's... For every crime that's committed, there's a consequence, and sex offender registration goes along with a lot of the different sex offenses, and, you know, he needs to go to court and meet with his lawyer and talk to the DA and make the pitch that he's, it's his first offense and he doesn't have a record, and see where they can go from there.
And what about the sexual offender list? Is it just one list? Do they have the pedophile list and the John list? I think he wouldn't mind making it onto another list. He doesn't want to be lumped in with old Uncle Lou, who's feeling up the neighborhood.
No, registration is under one penal code section, and you register. It's a lifetime registration, and you have to register with the local law enforcement agency nearest your home.
Lifetime.
Lifetime.
Yes. Wow. And it's a lifetime.
So it's lifetime.
So so this guy goes out to get a six pack, decides to hit on an undercover cop, and now he's on this list for good. That doesn't seem right.
Well, when you have a variety of sex offenses, for example, you have somebody who masturbates in public.
Adam, listen carefully.
Your car is not in public, by the way, if you have an illegal tint. How dare you?
When you call somebody over and they're peering into your window and you're doing your business there.
No, I never call. I hang a beach towel up and roll it right up into the window. I never call anyone over.
Good to know.
But if you do that, yes, that's
if you do that, it's a sex offense,
right?
Which you may be required to register for. And even though it's not the same as rape and it's not the same as molestation, it goes in and among the sex crimes, crimes which are deemed to be
registrable offenses.
And then what are long-term consequences for a guy like Bob who makes it onto the list? Are there anything getting a job or
licensing
anything like
through
that?
The state, that kind of thing, a problem?
The Megan's Law CD is available at most police departments, and anybody has access to that, they can search an area or a subject to see if they're a registered sex offender, what their offense was, et cetera.
But what does it do to them in terms of their
status
and
getting a job? Do they have to put that on the application?
I think job applications might specify, have you ever been convicted of a felony, or have you ever been convicted of a criminal offense, and then they would be writing down what they were convicted of. I don't know that anybody asks if you're a sex offender.
Okay, we got to take a break, but let me just say one last comment. I would assume that if this guy had adequate representation and went in front of the DA.
Unfortunately, I think that's the issue.
Well, he's not. No, he doesn't have the dream team working for him.
Right.
But if he had competent representation, went in front of the DA, explained the whole first-time offense business and the nature of the offense, that he could probably forego getting on that list. Would that be safe to say?
No, it's a case. It's a case by case basis.
Yes.
And I have to say, put in a plug for the public defenders who work at the courthouses. They're in that courtroom every day, and a lot of people think that because they don't hire them or pay a lot of money for them, that they're not doing any good for them.
Right.
And they're the ones who do as many trials as the DAs do, and are excellent attorneys. And
but they might not be interested in getting a guy like this on a list.
The ones I work with are pretty zealous for their clients, so I have to say that they work just as hard as, you know, the so-called dream teams, and they don't want their clients on these lists either. They always advocate for no sex offender registration, and some things you just
I want to talk after the break, too, about professionals and teachers and they violate these things and what we're doing about that.
All right, after this. There we go. Hey, Loveline, everybody. I'm Adam Carolla. That is Dr. Drew over there. Phone number 1-800-LOVE-191. Drew was just trying to convince our guests that the world was coming off its axis and heading into a flowing pit of lava.
I was building to, if you hadn't interrupted me, was that there needs to be some intrasocial way of containing this, that abuse, physical abuse, sexual abuse is something that is exponential growth built into it. People that abuse lots of people, and they abuse lots of people, and they abuse lots of people. And 60% of them, statistically, are the ones that become the serial abusers. Not all of them, but about 60%.
The victim becomes the victimizer.
The victim becomes the victimizer 60% of the time. And
right.
What are we doing to contain this? I mean, it's sort of out of control now, and there's nothing to corral it.
Well, I guess the question is it out of control now, or is it just being more reported now? Is this something that always went on? You know what I mean?
Yes, it's out of control.
It is?
Yes.
Well, I mean, here's what I'll challenge you with this, Drew, and maybe it is. I'm just playing a devil's advocate, and I'll place the same question to our guests. Let's say, let's just say, for the sake of argument, 100 years ago, or 50 years, let's go 50 years ago, the United States had 100 million people in something like that.
Yeah.
And I don't know what percent of them engaged in this behavior.
100 years ago?
50 years ago, there was 100 million people in the country, and, you know, X amount of percent engaged in this. It made a population of whatever.
Fraction of a percent.
Now there's 265 million people in the country.
Yeah.
Is it a larger percentage, or is it just doubled in size the population has doubled in size?
I think it's a larger percentage.
You do.
So, yeah.
How do you know that? I mean, obviously.
It's hard. I mean, for instance, look at sort of reports from the early mental health literature. These are people.
I was just perusing those on the way in today.
In the 19th century.
Turn of the century mental health literature.
The 19th century, doctors were beginning to talk to their patients about intimate stuff, and none of this stuff was really prevalent. Occasionally it would come up, and it was so considered so like what are they, impossible, that they thought they were just imagining it.
But this was obviously
something that couldn't happen. They just imagined that their dad had sex with them.
It was so taboo and everything that, I mean, it wasn't discussed
but
back
part
then.
Of taboo is it contains the behavior. It doesn't happen.
So what are we doing on this crappy show? We talk about it every night.
It's not taboo anymore. It's just we're just discussing it.
Yeah, but you're causing the problem by talking about it every night.
You can make that case.
Well, too late. I did, yeah. All right. What do you guys think? Is it worse?
I don't know if it's worse. I think there is a huge number of people who now report where they wouldn't have before.
How could it not be worse, though?
I'll tell you why, Drew. Because if you get into most families, or I shouldn't say most families, but if you get into the sort of lineage of a lot of families and start scratching around a little and asking about Grandpa Jones from 80 years ago and granddaughter this and whatever, you'll find in a lot of families that some things went on back when.
Yes.
With the grandparents in the 50s and the 40s or the turn of the century. So I think there wasn't as much probing going on back then that people didn't want to know, and this was almost more an unspoken thing, whereas now it's more of a spoken thing, and it seems like we're getting hit over the head with it. All right.
Well, you guys are doing an amazing thing also to have people like us on your show to tell your listeners out there that, you know, if you feel shame, if you feel like you've tried to disclose and nobody's listened to you, if you don't want to ruin your boyfriend's life because you're 14 and he's 19 and you know you shouldn't be having sex, you know, any of these reasons, there's so many reasons why people don't disclose. But, you know, we're here to say the process isn't as bad as you think it is. There are people out there who really care about what's happening to you. And if you call a hotline, if you call the police, if you tell a teacher, anybody you're comfortable with, there are services for you to help you move past this and move forward and make you feel safe.
Thank you. That's a good point. And Drew, one priest molesting now than there was 50 years ago? I don't think so.
No, I don't think so.
So there you go. And that's sort of an indication that it was going on back when, too, when you hear all these stories about Father Feel 'Em Up? Oh, wait a minute. That's a good comic series.
Doing a movie?
Send a sort of religious, scary religious message to the young people. Father Feel 'Em Up.
Feel 'Em Up. Feel 'Em Up.
Father Feel 'Em Up. Yeah.
Oh, Feel 'Em Up.
Father Oh, Feel 'Em Up. Right. Yeah, right. There you go. The Irish Catholic priest. Oh, Father will feel him up. See, Drew, I think this stuff's been going on for a long time.
Of course,
and just
of
like
course
in the
has.
Church, it was swept under the carpet.
Of course it has.
I'm playing devil's advocate because we got a lot more troublemakers around now. I will agree with that.
Of course, it's been around, but I think it's sort of going unchecked now. It's growing in a way that I don't see where it's going to stop.
Just a quick comment, Drew. You talk about molestation from the past. One of the things that I investigate are adult victims of child molestation. People who are 30, 40 years old,
right,
were molested by their parents or whoever back
right
in 1960,
right,
and they have come forward.
Right.
And,
so you're involved with the historical perspective.
That's correct.
And there's no statute of limitations on those cases?
There are statutes of limitations, but depending on the conduct, there are other statutes which override the limitations and let you file. And I actually have a couple of cases that are filed that have 40-year-old victims when they were molested when they were young kids, and they're filed.
And what if the perpetrators, in fact, passed away? Do you incarcerate the corpse? They would actually dig up the corpse and incarcerate. Just send
wouldn't
a message.
Wouldn't they already be incarcerated, though?
Well, it's a good point, but why should they should be doing hard time instead of resting in peace? And
that's pretty hard
grass
time.
You need at least
24 chromosomes
in order to.
And then they're jailed.
All right. Also, we don't want to forget to talk about collecting of evidence and kind of stuff.
Maybe after next break, we'll have Chris give a whole thing on that.
Okay.
Bob, 52, Bob.
Hi, how you doing? I wanted to call to let everyone know it is possible to beat a traffic ticket.
Right. How'd you do it?
Well, I do it all the time, and the way you do it is you find a good traffic attorney who handles traffic tickets. He usually charges you just a little bit more than what the ticket would be. If he wins the case, then you pay him his fee. If he doesn't win the case, you don't have to pay.
What's his fee?
A little more than the ticket.
About $200.
Right. And what can he do that you can't do?
Well, what they do is they find the things that are wrong with the ticket.
Right.
Lots of things that can be wrong with the ticket. The officer didn't write it right.
I hate this crap, though.
Why?
No, you like it, huh?
Well, you know why I like
it's
it?
It's screwing with the letter of the law. You know what I mean?
But you're
the always one that yells about the spirit as opposed to the letter.
I know, but here's the deal. If you're going to get a ticket for rolling through a four-way stop sign on a deserted intersection, then I say game on, you pussies. You want to play? Let's play then. Because you started it by writing the chicken-ass ticket in the first place. Now, if you're going 110 miles an hour and weaving in and out of traffic, that's another situation. But I do think there's quite a few tickets that are given for things that are not involving the letter of the law, but the spirit of the law. Or the other way around.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
The a-holes are going to go out and hire those attorneys are the ones that are going 110 miles an hour weaving through traffic.
I look at the whole ticket thing is the IRS. You idiots came up with a bunch of horrible ideas and now it's game on. You could have just done a flat rate and the tickets could have been handled in a more sensible way. But it's now game on.
Right.
And when now people get tax attorneys and they start finding shelters and loopholes and it's game on, but it was started by the government.
All right.
That's the way I look at it.
Here we go.
All right.
Mike is 22.
Drew, you're such a puss. You know, Drew got let off on a ticket a couple of months ago because they recognized him and started crying. He felt so bad. He was like, Gilran, I broke the law and he let me off. Drew, that should be the best day of your life.
I felt awful.
That means you've arrived.
I
Do you hear
that.
Me?
I hate that.
Because they knew you?
So guilty.
Why? Why bother getting
sped,
into it?
I've not sped since.
Oh, BS. You speed every night.
I was here in Culver City, of course.
You listen.
Just Culver City.
I see your car on the freeway. You do 80 every night. What do you mean you've not sped since? You don't count 80 as speeding.
Right.
Yes, you were going 90 when you got pulled over. That's why.
So the East Police will come.
The East Police.
Mike is 22.
All right.
Hi, Adam. Hi, Drew. How you guys doing tonight?
Good. What's up?
Okay, here's my question for you guys. About 3 months ago, I was in a relationship with this girl. Right now, she's currently my ex-girlfriend. And we were at my friend's house, and we were kicking back, relaxing, and she was drinking a little bit. And the whole night, she was giving me hints about wanting to have sex with me and then with one of my friends, too, at the time. And, you know, he didn't want to be in a threesome, so, you know, nothing like that was going to happen. So anyway, we ended up having sex that night, and the next day, for some reason, she does not remember it. She doesn't remember it at all.
Right.
And that night, this is without my knowledge, that night she went and filed a report for rape. And then I find out Sunday afternoon, I get arrested Sunday night, and I get released because there's not enough evidence for a complaint. And my question is to the detective and the DA, if someone does remember that there was sex and they gave consent, is that still rape?
In California.
How old was she?
She was 24.
Well, if she consented and she had sex with you and she was over 18, then that's not
rape.
Well,
but in California, though, if you are intoxicated, you were not able to render consent. And so it's considered a sexual assault.
If you are incapable of giving consent.
But the state defines it fairly strictly, and it's a like two beers basically, it starts to call it into question. And so, you know, the whole issue of how, what kind of state you have to be in to be able to render consent, but then they'd have to be able to prove that, right?
Right. Well, if she wasn't coming forward to say I was raped, if she says, you know, I did have a couple beers, but this is what I wanted to do, and she's over the legal age, then there wouldn't be a complaint filed.
Yeah, she knows she was drinking. And
well, she filed the complaint though, right?
And she's saying she was blacked out.
And she says she doesn't remember it.
She says she's blacked out.
Yeah, and the thing is, she says we had a conversation after you know the act was completed, and she remembers part of the conversation afterwards. So what I'm wondering is, how can she remember the conversation, but not the sex?
That can happen.
Yeah, I've had a lot of forgettable sex.
Yeah, in fact,
most people I've had sex with don't remember, and then when they find out, they're disgusted. What?
Well, they don't remember, they just didn't notice.
They didn't notice.
A little different.
Are you in? Oh, really? Oh, wait, you're done? Wow.
No.
That was nothing.
It's a little different.
It's like when people go to the dentist and it's fast. Wow. I don't know why Don't know why I was avoiding that so long. Hey, Mike?
Yeah.
What did you guys talk about afterward?
About she has two kids, so we talked a little bit about that. And,
That's horrible.
I don't know. She was, you know.
Here, here's a gym sock. Mop up. How are the kids? Great.
Oh, and
that's fantastic. That's horrible pillow talk, by the way. The kids.
Well, she's the one that brought it up.
I see. Okay. All right.
And we were talking about how the relationship was going because we'd been dating for like 3 weeks.
Oh, all right. And is she speaking to you now, or she
actually issued a restraining order against me. Because she still believed that she was raped. And I remember she was on top, so I don't know how she doesn't remember it all, so I don't see how that's rape. But my second part of my question is, how long does it take for DNA evidence to come back? This happened in November of last year, and it's been 3 months.
Well, what are they trying to find, evidence of sperm?
Well, yes, they're trying to, because she thinks she was raped by my two other friends as well.
She
thinks that happened
all right,
too.
Okay.
And,
hold on, Dave. Mike, hold on.
Sure.
It depends on what state and what area you're in and how crowded the local DNA laboratory is. But, yeah, generally it's several months, a backlog of cases.
Okay.
All right. So, Mike, I feel for you. And by the way, I'm just going under the assumption that you didn't actually rape this person. I'm taking your word for it. But this is what happens when you get caught up with nut jobs. And this is a nutty broad.
Yes.
And this is the kind of stuff that happens.
Again.
All right. Yeah. So it's your fault for dating screwballs in the first place. You understand that?
Well, here's my point. She was trying to get her life back on track. She was going to church, you know, trying to be religious, and then...
One of the very difficult parts about this whole, I'm sure you'll attest to this whole phenomenon, is that people who were victimized often distort. And they will perceive things that may have been volitional or may be mutual as a violation. And it becomes real difficult to know where reality is and where a perpetrator is and where the victimization lies.
Right. Right, and may even possibly seek it out in their mind's eye.
In a repetitive victimization pattern.
Right.
It's like any sex equals rape. So if I had sex with a guy, he must have raped me.
I'm a rapist.
True,
good.
Please.
I'll tell you more about that after the
Mike's
break.
Mike's still hot.
Okay.
All right, we'll be back. It is Loveline. I'm Adam Carolla. Is that my headphones, or is that the way it sounds?
Sounds fine.
That's Dr. Drew. Eva Jabber.
If you're nasally drone, if you consider
right.
that fine.
Eva Jabber is our guest. She's a deputy district attorney from Los Angeles. Thank you. Christopher Koniak's also a detective, and these guys know what's going on in the lives of all the perps and victims and all this whole sick mess we call a society. And Christopher offered a ride-along for me to go along with him and see what a day in the life is like. And I would like to take you up on that because I'm interested in that. And I would like to extend a ride-along for you. Wait, you can come along with me. We can speed. We can roll through four-way stop signs. We can hit off a joint.
Turn right.
All the things.
On a red arrow.
Turn right.
That's a specialty.
I turn left on red arrows constantly. I am completely and utterly offended by these arrows that turn red when it's completely unnecessary and turn left all the time. So you may ride along as well with me while we then abuse the law. not the law enforcement community. They I like. It is the laws. And Drew, you should have never brought the arrow up.
Okay,
you should have. But just let me ask. I got to ask. Why the red arrow? Now, here's what I want to say. I understand the green arrow because the traffic gets backed up in certain intersections during certain times of the day where if only two cars are turning per traffic light cycle, it's going to get backed up.
Why not a sign yield during red arrow as opposed to stop during red arrow?
True. No, wrong question. Green arrow, green.
Go.
That means everyone make your turn.
Yeah.
And then have it turn to nothing. And use your own judgment to turn left after that. Why have to sit there and wait?
Some intersections are like that.
Some are.
It says yield then during green, during red arrow.
No, it just turns to nothing.
No, in passing, it will say yield during red arrow.
Yeah, there'll be a sign usually that says yield, whatever, but there'll be a green arrow. And then the green arrow goes,
you go.
It'll be a solid green, and you can continue. There will be no red arrow. But the red arrows generally tend to be a little bit more crowded intersections, major intersections.
Yeah, but
intersections
why in the middle
where traffic collisions occur on a regular basis.
But, okay, in Culver City, that must be every intersection.
Every intersection.
That's up to each city's municipal planning department.
Well, there's a red arrow. There's an arrow that turns red turning onto this little crappy podunk street right here every night that you have to sit at, and if you catch it at the wrong time, you have to let the signal cycle through. You cannot be trusted to turn. Now, I turn on them constantly, and if a cop pulls me over, I'm just going to say, look, I'm just doing what I would have done if I was at a signal that did not have an arrow. I know he's going to give me a ticket. By the way, though, I think it is so worth it to run 150 of those and get one ticket than it is just to sit there like a lemming, like a putz, and wait to be carjacked.
Given they have about 45 seconds left, can I have Chris describe what will happen if someone makes a report?
Oh, yes, a sexual report. And then we'll talk off the air about these arrows.
Basically, if a person comes in to make a sexual abuse report, especially a rape, you'll get a quick statement from a patrol officer. Then you'll be taken for an examination, usually to a hospital.
Do you have to have police right away, or can the social service come in, or is somebody else other than officers?
If you make a police report, it'll start with that.
Okay.
If social services goes, then we'll contact you usually a couple days later.
I'm a rapist.
Drew, please, go ahead. I'm sorry.
The important thing is the preservation of evidence. try and preserve anything, any fluids, the bedding, clothing that was worn, because that can be crucial as far as obtaining DNA evidence.
How would you preserve that?
In a paper bag is fine, not
should
a plastic bag.
Should you keep wearing whatever you were wearing? I mean,
if you are making a report that night, if you were, say, assaulted, and then you go to the police, yes,
maybe
please.
Keep your pajamas on.
Keep everything you have on. Do not wash yourself. Do not brush your teeth, because that evidence for us is very, very crucial.
Why not a plastic bag, by the way?
Because what we'll do is we need any bodily fluids to eventually dry out so they can be taken a sample. If it's a plastic bag, you're aware of it, Doctor. The fluids, biological evidence will decompose in a different manner and won't be usable.
Wasn't aware. I was thinking just the opposite. Like
we do the same with blood.
Put the comforter in Tupperware and bring it over. But
you want to keep it open to air.
That's correct.
Interesting.
But sealed inside like a plastic, like a grocery bag is fine. A paper.
Right.
Paper so grocery bag.
It doesn't lose any of its integrity if a bodily fluid or blood dries out.
No.
Interesting. I would have thought that it would have been more difficult to discern whatever you wanted to discern.
Of course,
from it.
Through time, it's going to degrade.
Right.
But if it's only been a couple of days or two,
they found blood on car seats and on different items 20 years later. They can still test for blood in certain circumstances if it's been preserved.
Right. Yeah, don't confuse presence with infectivity and anatomic intactness, mm-hmm. things like that.
And you don't need to make that. And you don't need to make that decision yourself. Just bring yourself in if you've showered after it happened and it's the next day or the day after, they can still collect biological evidence from you.
Right. Okay.
Is there a window after which you would no longer bother with a forensic exam?
You can have healed trauma, so years later, which can show up. So it's never too late to report it, and it's never too late to go in for an exam. So we'd really encourage people to do it anytime.
Okay. Yeah. We'll take a break. We'll be right back. Thank Eva and Christopher for coming in here and shedding some light on a dark, dark subject and answering a lot of questions that
we'll do
have.
This again sometime.
Thanks for
having
us. Anytime,
anytime.
Yeah, I would look forward to that. And Drew, you all right?
I'm a rapist.
Please wait till they leave. So until next time, this is Adam Carolla for Dr. Drew saying mahalo.
You have a variety of sex offenses. For example, you have somebody who masturbates in public.
Adam, listen carefully.
Your car is not in public, by the way, if you have an illegal tin.
This has been Loveline. The opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily those of the staff, management, sponsors, or this station. The producer for Loveline is Ann Wilkins Engel. Loveline is a presentation of Westwood One Entertainment.